Shalom aleichem, everyone. Haven't seen you in a while. We're on Kuf Yud Beis Amud Beis. And we'll start with Amar Rav, just a little bit of a review. So that's in the middle of the page. You'll see it about 10 lines up before the wide lines. Amar Rav, Mekaymen es Hashtar Shalom Bifnei Baal Din. And we'll soon see that Rava is going to paskin like Rav, that although we have a principle that we don't usually accept edus unless the Baal Din who stands to lose is present, he has to be there at the time of the edus. The exception to the rule, again, we had a number of exceptions to the rule actually, if let's say the edim have to check out to Medina Sayyam and things like that, but here the exception to the rule is what's called Kiyum Hashtar. And we'll soon see Tosis Dibra Masla B'Kaimis Hashtar to try to figure out why Kiyum Hashtar is the exception to the rule. You don't need the Baal Din. So let's say, for example, the Malva produces a Shtar against the Lova. And even if the Lova is claiming Mizuyov, that the Shtar is a counterfeit, nevertheless, the Malva could go ahead and subpoena two witnesses to testify and authenticate the shtar, even if the love is not there present at the time of the edus. Rabbi Yochanan Amar, Eimei Kaimis Hashtar Shelo Bifnei Baal Din. The love has to be there at the time of the Kiyum Hashtar when the edim come in to testify and validate, authenticate the shtar. And Rabbi Yochanan is just simply applying a universal rule to a specific case. And that rule is that edim have to be made in front of the Baal Din. Now that din itself, if you recall, we had a suffix, whether that's Doraisa or Drabonon, the Torah says, Vahuat Bibolov, but yet the case of Sharmuat is Dine Nefashos, and the Rabbonon extended it to Dine Momenus as well. So we're talking about Dine Momenus, a Malvin Alova, and the Rabbonon required that the Edim testify in front of the Baal Din. In this case, the Lova has to be there at the time of the Kiyum Hashtar. That's the sheet of Rabbi Yochanan. And again, we'll have to explain why Rav postulates that the exception to this rule is Kiyum Hashtaros. Omalei Rav Sheshes, the Rav Yossi, Rav Yavo, Azbrolon Taimid Rav Yochanan. I can explain the logic that underlies Rav Yochanan's principle, and that is based on the Omer Kro. The Pasuk says, V'vad v'bol of lo yishmerenu in Shara Muad. It says that the Baal Hashar has to be there in Bezdin at the time of the Eden testify against the Shar. Omer Torah Shiyova Baal Hashar V'yamad Al Shoro. And therefore we're going to extend that principle from Dine Nefashos to Dine Momenos. Omer Rava Hilchisa Mekaymes Hashtar Shelo Bifnei Baal Din. L'halacha, we passing like Rav, and that is that Kiyum Hashtar is the exception to the rule, and you don't need the Lova to be there present in Bezdin at the time that the Edom testify and verify the Shtar. Tosis Dibra Maschel Mekaimim Es Hashtar Shelo Bifnei Baal Din. What's the underlying reason of Rav? And Tosis assumes that's his premise, that Rav, like Rav Yochanan, accepts the principle of Bifnei Baal Din, that the Edom have to testify in front of the Baal Din, and extend that principle even to Dine Momenos. So both Rav and Rabbi Yochanan will apply as a general rule this principle of Bifnei Baal Din to Edus in Dine Momenos, but Rav postulates that the exception to the rule is Kiyum Shtaros. And why is that? So if you take a look at about six lines into Tosus, the first word in the line is Ka'omar. Tosus says the Kiyum Shtar Dirabbanon. The Edim Achasum Al Hashtar Kibishenechre Dusim Bebezdin Dom Vien Tzorach Kiyum Umirabbanan Hu Ditzorach Hilkach Mekayminon Shelo Bifnei Baal Din. Tosis points out the following premises. Premise number one, that all Edus in Momenos is Doraisa. I mean, the Torah says Al Pif Shnayim Yochum Dov, I can't force you to pay me unless I can support my claim with two Edim. That's premise number one. Premise number two is that Edus in Kiyum Hashtaros is only Durabbanon. And that's based on premise number three, and that is that Eidim Achsum al Shtar Nasa Kemishin Echrei Dusum Bepesdin, meaning the Torah itself relies on a shtar. It does not question the veracity of the shtar. The Torah says that every shtar is Kemishin Echrei Dusum Bepesdin. It's as if the two Eidim signed in the shtar were in Bezdin. They testified in front of Bezdin. That's the magic of shtar. And the Eidim was subject to all the drishas, the chakiris, to all the investigations, and they pass with flying colors, and therefore the shtar is absolutely reliable and valid even without kiyum. The entire institution of kiyum shtaros, the requirement of kiyum shtaros, when the lova claims mizuyof, is only a rabbinic institution. It's only derabbanan. And the Rabbanon are not going to make it so hard, so difficult on the Malva, since really, on a Torah level, the Malva should be able to collect and force the Lova to pay based on the Shtar, even without Kiyum. And there's no credibility to the Lova's claim that the Shtar is Mizuyof and it's a counterfeit. The Torah relies on that Shtar. The Rabbanon require Kiyum. And the Rabbanon say that, you know what, this Shtar is not going to be valid until this Kiyum. But since the Rabbanu were the ones who invented this requirement of kiyum, therefore they were mekil, and they made it a little bit easier on the malveh. In a case where the lova is not in Bezdin, the lova refuses to come to Bezdin, or he's out of town, or whatever the case may be, and they allowed the Eidim to testify and verify the shtar, even in the absence of the lova, in the absence of the baldin. And that Tosus says is a kula de Rabbanu. You know, we could add the following, that the whole requirement of Ifnei Baal Din might be Drabbana, because we're dealing with Dinei Mamonos. And now you're on top of that, the requirement of Kiyum Shtaros of that Eidus is only Drabbana. At least if he, you know, if the Malva didn't have a Shtar and he needed to aid him to testify that the Lova borrowed money from him, that would be Eidus D'Oraisa. Because Al Pishnayim Eidim Yochum Dov, when the Lova says, I never borrowed money from you, he's believed. And then you could say that that since the requirement of Bifnei Baldin is in Dini Momentus is Drabbanon, well, now we're going to have to apply it in all Eidus Drabbanon as far as being Motzi Momentus Mechezkoso when the requirement of Eidus is Doraisa. But in the case of Kiyum Shtaros, where the whole requirement of Eidus to support the claim of the Malv against the Lov is only Drabbanon, there the Drabbanon are going to drop the ball on the requirement of Bifnei Baldov. That's the sheet of Tosfos.
What is the key of Ashtaros?
Key of Ashtaros is possible in three different methods, and for that you have to come to my Wednesday night shiur in Masech Tiksubis, where we spent weeks upon key of Ashtaros. But just to give you the nutshell, you know, the tip of the iceberg. One possibility is where the Eidei Ashtar themselves come in and testify that this Shtar was signed by us.
Right.
The second possibility is two other Eidim come and they recognize the signatures of the Eidei Ashtar and they testify on the Hempik Shtar.
Right.
And the third possibility is what's called Henpek. Henpek means if you have a Shtar that's already Mekuyam and it has a Henpek on it, it means it has the seal of Bezdin, then we could do what we call comparative signatures.
But the only thing, but the only thing that this Eidus is on the signatures on the Shtar, one way or the other. They're just verifying that these are really signatures on the Shtar.
Well, that's a machlok shin Rebbe and the Chachamim. In other words, let's say the question that Rebbe and the Chachamim address is whether or not the Eidim are testifying on the Halva itself. For example, according to one Shita, the Shita of Rebbe, you need two Eidim on each signature. But according to the Chachamim, it's enough if each Eid testifies on his own signature. So again, as I said before, there are three different methods of Kiyum Shtaros, one of which is when we subpoena the Eidei Ashtar. The other is when two Eidim testify that they recognize the signature of the Shtar.
Right.
The question is, do you have to have two Eidim on each signature, or is it enough that you have one aid and he will link up with the other aid and each aid can testify on one signature, and that's enough to create two aidim on the shtar itself? Our premise here when we study this Tosus and this sugya of Bifnei Baldovar is that if you have the Eidei Ashtar themselves, and they're coming into Beis Din, and each one is recognizing his own signature, then basically you can resurrect the original Eidus on the Halva. And if that be the case, the two Eidim are basically testifying against the Lover. And that's why Tosis is bothered by the sheet of Rav and Rav Apaskas like Rav, that you don't need the Lover to be there. If they're testifying against the Lover, this should be a classical case of Eidei Halva. Eidei Halva can only testify if the Lover is present in Beis Din. So Tosis answers that the Shtar itself, even without Kiyum HaShtaros, is enough to be Mechayev the Lover on a Deraisa level.
That's what Tosis, it sounds like what Tosis is saying is the Lover really has no good position other than if he can bring the Eidim themselves and they say this is not our signature, we didn't sign this at all.
On a Deraisa level, that's absolutely correct. It's only the Rabbanan who require Kiyum HaShtaros.
Right. Doesn't it depend on what it is the Lover is claiming? This is all very
well.
Fine.
Now you're entering into another sugya, Michael. That's the sugya of Moda v'shtar shekesavo. Now, it's what would be if the Lover himself admits that the shtar is a valid shtar, just he claims he paid up. So that's a whole different sugya. We're talking about a sugya where the Lover claims mizuyah.
I see.
The Lover is claiming that it's not a valid shtar because the signatures are counterfeit. And the Torah says that the Lover is not believed with such a claim. The Rabbanan believe that claim up to the point where the Balva produces two Eidim to be Mekayim the Shtar. Now, presumably, if these two Eidim are testifying on the Halva and they're forcing the Lover to pay up, the Lover should be there in Beis Din. So Tosa says that the Rabbanan wanted to make it easier on the Malva, since on a deraisa level the Malva is not really forced to prove the authenticity, right? So he doesn't have to authenticate the shtar. So they allowed him, if need be, to testify shelo b'fnei alov. Then we have the Rashba Shita. The Rashba Shita is different, and he claims the following: that the Chiddush of Rav is not a chiddush in Hilchas Eidus, meaning that the Rabbanon alleviated the requirement in Hilchas Eidus of Bifnei Baldin, but rather that Rav's chiddush is a chiddush in Hilchos Kiyum Ashtar. And what does that mean? The Rashba claims that Rav has a whole new perspective on Kiyum Ashtar. What is Kiyum Ashtar? We were assuming, and that's how Tosus was assuming, that Kiyum Ashtar is a testimony on the Halva itself. And therefore, it's the Lover who's the Baldin. And the essence and the thrust of this Eidus is against the Lover. And therefore, the Lover should be there. And Tosus has to answer, well, the Rabbanu would make it, because the Torah doesn't require the Malva to be Mekayim Mishtar. The Rashba, on the other hand, claims that the Chiddush of Rav, and Rav is passing like Rav, is that Kiyum Shtaros has nothing to do with the Lover at all. The Lover is not on trial. The Eidim are not testifying against the Lover. In fact, it's quite possible that the Eidim know nothing about the Halva. All they know about is the signatures on the Shtar. Now again, I mentioned to you before the different methods of being Mekayim Shtar. One out of the three methods is where we invite the two Eidim themselves, the original two Eidim. In that case, it could be that the Eidim are testifying against the Lover. You have to know. But at least in the other two cases of Kiyum Ashtar, where we introduce two other Eidim, not the Eidei Ashtar, or we have Henpek in which we compare one Shtar to another, says the Rashba, the Eidus here is not on the Halva, but rather on the Shtar. The Shtar becomes a separate entity. Now, even though indirectly, any testimony on the Shtar is going to impact on the Lover, but that's not the direct objective of the Eidus. The Eidim who are testifying now to verify the Shtar and authenticated signatures have nothing to do with the Halva. They may know nothing about the Halva, and that's fine. All they have to do is they have to be expert witnesses, so to speak, on the signatures on the Shtar. We have to verify that this document was honestly and authentically signed by the Eidim whose names appear on the Shtar. And that is a question on the Shtar itself. We're dealing with the Shtar as an entity. The objective of the Eidus in Kiyum is the Shtar itself. I'll read to you the Rashba's language. The Rashba says, "Ein hanitva choshev kibaldin le'inyan kiyum chasimus hashtar. Lefisha ein zu Eidus olav, it's not an Eidus on the baldin, o al maisa ha nitva, ela al hashtar atzmo." The Rashba says that the thrust of this Eidus of Kiyum HaShtar is not the Lova and the Halva, but rather the Shtar itself. It's interesting what the Rashba is doing here. In a sense, he's playing a little bit of a game. I mean, we all know, and we all have to admit, that the thrust of this Eidus and its purpose is to allow the Malva to collect from the Lova. How can you say the Lova is not a Maldova? He certainly has a Negiah here in this Eidus. But what the Rashba does is he creates this conceptual framework in which we distinguish between the Shtar as an entity and the results of the Shtar and the repercussions of being Machsha the Shtar vis-a-vis the Lova. All that is going to be bracketed. And we're going to focus totally on the Shtar itself. Tosas, on the other hand, I think, that's just my own Hashara, Tosas is not willing to separate between the Shtar and the Halva itself, because the Shtar is not an entity that we're interested in. Who cares about the Shtar? What are we dealing with the Shtar? The Shtar is only relevant as an instrument in the hands of the Malva to collect for the Lova, and therefore the Lova is certainly the Baldin. On the other hand, the Rashba is not happy with Tosas's approach, because Tosas's approach only makes sense if you assume that the Rabbana would be Mekil and Kiyum Shtaros. And truthfully, I don't want to get into this now, but that depends upon a whole different issue about what happens to a shtar she'ena mekuyam. Is a shtar she'ena mekuyam on a drabanan level stripped of kinechkara? It's not a shtar at all. And basically we have to make this edus into an edus. As far as the Rabbanan are concerned, the edus is not worth a dime. It's not worth a penny. It doesn't register on the Richter scale of edus. And if that be the case, then all the laws that govern Eidus should apply to Kiyum Shtaros. So no, the Rabbanan are not taking the Shtar and ripping it and stripping it of its Kenechkara. It still is Kenechkara. The Rabbanan are just saying we need an extra clarification in order to allow the Malva to collect his money based on this Shtar. And that clarification is that this Shtar is indeed authentic against the claim of the Lova.
What's the point of them shining it in the first place then? If somebody's got a shtar signed by Eidim,
well, the best way of doing it is to invite the Eidim to sign the shtar in Bezdin. And if they do it that way, then right. Bezdin create the henpeck immediately.
Okay.
And that was common practice. But in the event that the Malva and the Lova are out there in wherever they are, the Malva has to guarantee himself that he'll be able to be Mekayim the shtar, which means he has to make an effort, if he wants to use the shtar, to guarantee that either A, B, or C, either the Eidim will be available to testify on their own signatures. Now, if it's a 10-year loan, or if he knows that the Eidim are out doing business in China, he's got a problem. Then he has to rely on the second possibility that there are other two Eidim available, and they'll be able to testify 10 years down the line to verify this. Or he knows alternatively he has in his pocket, or he knows a friend of his who has in his pocket the shtar with the same two Eidim that have a henpeck on it. Yeah, I was recently in Beis Din here in Yerushalayim for a get, and in the Beis Din they have two Eidim that are, I'll use the word in Yiddish, I don't know how you say it in English, upständig. I mean they're always there. You know, they are the designated Eidim of Beis Din. So in that case, yeah, they're from the Asora Batlani Ha'ir, or the Shiva Batlani Ha'ir, the Tumei Ha'ir. It's very interesting because you don't have to instruct them how to sign the shtar. Well oiled machinery. And in such a case, if the Malva uses these two Eidim, he always knows that he has recourse to be Mekayim that Shtar, because the Eidim are always there. Again, what's going to be 10 years down the line? I don't know. But as a result of this Takot of Kiyum Shtaros, the Malva is very well advised by his, legal counsel to make sure that he's going to be able to be Mekayim the Shtar. Otherwise, he's out. You know, the Lova could just say Mezuyof, and then the Malva is out.
I understand. Quite often there was a process where automatically that the Malva would take the Shtar to Beit Mekayim.
That's the best idea, you know, that the Malva go ahead before and be Mekayim the Shtar even before he asked it to be Tovei the Lova. Now the Gemara says something very strange. V'afilu omed v'tzoveach. Which means that even if the Lova is standing in Beis Din, and he's yelling and screaming that the shtar is mezuyah, it doesn't matter. We can still be Mekayim the shtar. So I'm not sure here. I looked around. I didn't find anything satisfactory to share with you. So I'm going to just leave it as an open-ended question. I don't know why Rav has to dramatize. Like, what's the Hava mean here? Okay, the Lov is claiming it's Mizuyah. Al Dakar Skinon. I mean, that's exactly what we're dealing with. A case where the Lov is claiming Mizuyah. Okay, Rav adds, even if he's yelling and screaming Mizuyah. Okay, that makes it a little more dramatic. But Afal Pichen, if the Malva claims it's an authentic shtar, and the Lova claims it is a false shtar, then we are going to allow the Malva to bring two Edim, or whatever the case may be, in order to be Mekayim the shtar. No, the Chiddush of Rava is that we pass him like Rav, that we don't need the Lova to be there at the time that the Edim come into Beis Din. Who cares if he's Omed Vitzover?
But that's what Rav is saying, is that even if you were Omed Vitzover, we wouldn't pay any attention to it.
Yeah, but I'm just saying, why would I think otherwise? You know, is this an emotional plea over here? You know, he's passionately, you know, yelling and screaming in a dramatic way, hey, you know, this is a Mizuyov, so what? I wanted to suggest the following, but you'll soon see that this is not correct. I think that maybe what Rav has in mind, Omid Vitzoveach, is that the Lov is yelling and screaming that I have two Edim to testify that this is a Ziv, that they know that this is not the signatures of the two Edim. They recognize the Edim and they know this is not their signatures. And the Chiddush of Rava is that even though the Lova is claiming that he has two Edim to disqualify the Shtar and prove its forgery, nevertheless, that doesn't block in any way the legal procedures that allow the Malva to be Mekayim the Shtar. But I'll tell you why I think it's wrong, because look at the next line of the Gemara. He says, Ve'i Omar, if the Lova claims Nikitu li Zimna, give me an extension of time, ad maisina sahadi umarana lishtar, until I bring Edim to prove that this shtar is a forgery, is naktinan le. We're going to give him an extension of time. We'll soon see how much time we're going to give him, but in any event, what I told you I think is incorrect. That afilu omed vitzovech, I wanted to say that the Lov is yelling and screaming, I have Edim, just that they're on a long trip. Give me time to subpoena them, to give them time to travel back from where they are, and they will testify and establish without a shadow of a doubt that this shtar is a ziyuf. It says that we don't listen to him. And now the Gemara is saying that we do listen to him. So again, yesh li ashi bedochak. Maybe we don't listen to him as far as the fundamental halacha of kiyum hashtar and all the halachas that apply to kiyum hashtar, meaning that we don't need avos bifnei baldin. That applies even though he's omid vitzoveach. However, we will allow for a certain power. We will empower the lover to suspend the procedure, delay the procedure of Kiyum HaShtar. And why is that? Because he claims that he has Edim out there. Now, how long of a time are we going to give him? I mean, are we going to wait endlessly until these Edim finally show up? So the Rambam says in Hilchos Malvolov that this halacha only applies if the Dayanim believe the claim of the Lover. There's something about the claim of the Lover that's so specific. You know, he identifies the Edim, for example. He tells you exactly where they are. He tells you how long it's going to take for them to return. And the Rambam says only under those conditions are we going to delay the process of being Mekayim the Shtar and forcing the Lover to pay the Malva based on the Lover's claim that he has Edim. But if it looks Nirebi Enea Dayonim, says the Rambam, Sheyesh Mamash Bidvarov, that there is some, he's not just trying to, you know, foot drag and delay the process of having to pay back the Malva, but that really there's truth to what he says, or at least there's a very logical, plausible possibility, then we'll delay the process. Says the Magid Mishnah, Hazman shen nosnim lo, so how much of an extension of time we're going to give to delay this process? Is gam hu lefi ra'os eini adayonim. Meaning, what the Rambam is saying, that it's ra'os eini adayonim, the dayonim have to judge in each case, number one, they have to judge whether or not they should bechlal delay the case, and trust the lover that maybe in fact he has Edim. And number two, Lefira os eneha dayanim, they're going to decide how much of a delay they're going to institute. And the Rush insists that it's always Shloshim Yom, that whenever Beis Din is compelled to delay their final verdict, it's always a period of not more than 30 days. So Beis Din will decide to give the Lovet a maximum of 1 month until he can finally produce these Edim. If in fact the Edim come in to Beis Din as the Lovet claimed they would, fine. Now Beis Din is going to sit down, they're going to accept the Edus, and they're going to interrogate them and decide whether or not the Shtar is a Ziyuf, it's a forgery or not. But Elo Asa, if on the other hand, the whole claim of the Lova turns out to be a bunch of hot air, it's a bluff, no Edim show up to Beis Din, is then we got to get the Lova into Beis Din and we have to force the Lova to pay up the Chov. Again, assuming there was Kiyum HaShtar. Now, how long of a period of time do we give the Lova until he shows up to Beis Din? For example, let's say Beis Din sits on Mondays and Thursdays. So Monday comes along, the shtar is already mekuyam, and the lova is nowhere to be found. So they send, we'll learn a whole sugi now about how they do this, they send a message to the lova, you better show up in Beis Din. Well, maybe the lova is preoccupied. Maybe the lova is out of town. Maybe the lova is trying to gather together the funds to pay back the malva. There may be any number of reasons why the lova didn't show up on that Monday. But can this process extend endlessly? You know, there's got to be bookends here. At some point, the Beis Din has to finally assume that this lova is not showing up. Despite all the invitations, he refuses to show. That's called Mesarev Lova LeBeis Din. So the Gemara says over here in the name of Rava that it's Bahab. What's Bahab? Beis Din. So we'll give him three shots at it. You know, we'll invite him once, twice, and thrice. And we'll see after the third time that he refuses to show up in Beis Din what we're going to do, what measures we're going to take against the loaf. But basically we'll give him this leeway up to three times that we invited him on three consecutive yeshivos of Beis Din. Later on, the Gemara is going to discuss the question of whether or not they can warn him from the get-go for these three times, or he needs three warnings, once after Beis, once after Hay, and once after the next Beis. Okay, that we'll get to in a minute. Fine, Natrin and Le, Sheni, V'chamishi, V'sheni. And now he doesn't show up on three occasions. What do we do now? Ilo Asa is Kasvinon, Psicha, Ilove. Okay, so now we get to something that's called a Shtar Psicha. We'll have to figure out exactly what the etymology of the word Psicha is. But The Rashi and all the Mefarshim say that the word psicha is equal to the word nidui. Now, exactly what does it say in this shtar? The Rif quotes one of the Gaonim who has the whole nusach hashtar. I'm going to read it to you. It's a pretty harsh nusach. And it says the following. Anu, meaning we, the undersigned, the Beis Din, Kosvin Lekilos Yisrael, we're writing a general statement to all Jewish communities. Ploni, so and so. Gazarnu Olav Din, we decree that he has to show up in Beis Din. Vesirev, and he refused to show up. Does anybody know what that's called in the secular legal system? But this contempt of court, I think, is the result of not showing up. There's a word for not showing up, isn't there? Oh, okay. Doesn't matter. Anyway, velo hishgiach, and he refuses all our warnings. Vichramnu oso, shelo lispalel ba'asara, he cannot daven with a minion. Lo yizdamein bishlosha, he cannot be part of a zimun. V'altamulo es bino. We don't. Now, I don't know why his child has to be held responsible. V'altikavru lo mes. Now, I don't know what that means. It means one of his relatives. We're not going to bury them. I don't know what this means. Vahotziu banav mi beis ha-sefer. We expel his children from the school. Ve'ishto mi beis ha-kneses. And even his wife is not allowed to daven in the ladies' section. Achi yekabel olav es hadin. Pretty harsh, no?
I don't understand.
Now again, today, I don't know if in any Beis Din would get it. You know, maybe, I don't know, maybe in certain communities even today, but back in the day, this was a very strong weapon in the hands of Beis Din.
But this isn't because...
So my recommendation is, don't be a Sarvan and show up.
That's right. Yeah. This is because of the contempt of Beis Din, which has got nothing at all to do with the Alva'a.
Well, this is in addition to the fact that he's going to have to pay the halva. Now, what we're going to discuss how we collect the money if he doesn't show up. How do we, you know, today maybe you know you could go into his. I don't know exactly how this works, but you can at least freeze his accounts or whatever you can do. What did they do back in the day? So again, shlav number one is we zap him with nidui. That's called a shtar psicha. We'll get back to shtar psicha a little bit later on in the sugya. Now we get to Shlav Beis. Okay, now how do we get the money out of this guy? Because maybe he'll say, okay, you know, I'll move out of the community, you know, I'll change my name and my passport, you know, and they'll invite me to shul, or, you know, I'll give a great nedava, and they'll, you know, they'll give me all the red carpet treatment because I'm offering, you know, a tremendous check for the center. Okay. So now, how do we get the money out of him? So Tishim Yom, we're going to start a process that's going to take 90 days, meaning only at the end of the 90 days will the Malva be able to collect from the loaf. Now what's happening during these 90 days? And the Gemara is going to divide up this 90-day period into three periods of 30 days each. Tlosin Kamoi, Lo Nachtinin L'Nichsei. For the first 30 days, why are we not going down to confiscate his possessions on behalf of the Malva? The Omar, or the way the Bach has it, the Amar, which means maybe we should say, Kotorach Bezuze Venezuf. He has no money, he's really working hard to gather together the funds, even if it means borrowing the money from someone else. Now, I don't know if any of you gentlemen have ever had any experience with gemachs. We ran a gemach, my wife and I, in memory of my wife's grandparents. And basically, what the people doing, they do what's called gilgul chovos. You know, they borrow from you, and then when it's time to pay you up, they borrow from someone else, and it goes on and on and on. So in any event, the loveh is desperately trying to gather together the funds. We'll give him 30 days for that. Mitzioi. Now we're up to the second or the middle section of the 30 days. Nami, lo nachtin elein chasidi imar or omar, dilma lo ashkach lemeziv. He did not find anyone, and I wonder why. I'm being facetious. Why he couldn't find anyone to lend him the money to pay back his halva to the first malva. And what's he doing? V'katarach umizaben. So what he's desperately trying to do is sell his property in order to pay back his chov. So we give him 30 days to try to gather the funds. Obviously, he has failed. He hasn't gathered the funds. At this point, he has no recourse if he wants to pay back the chov other than to sell his possessions. It's getting a little sad. I have a tear in my eye here, but this is what the law is. Okay. Now, Basrai, why don't we collect from him... Or allow the Malva to confiscate the property of the Lova after 60 days, after the second period of 30 days, when presumably he could have sold his liquidated his possessions in order to pay back the Malva. Basroi Nami Lo Nachtina will give him another 30 days before we confiscate his possessions. Why? Di Omar Lo Keach Gufe Katorech Bezuze. We assume that he was able to sell his property, but again, who's willing to buy property secondhand? Generally, it's not the upper echelon of the financial strata of society, so it's a person who agreed to buy the possessions, but he hasn't yet gathered together the funds to pay back the mocher. So this lover, who's now a mocher, is waiting for the lokeach to gather together his funds in order to pay the mocher. V'lo asa, he still doesn't come. So now 90 days have elapsed. Now we get to what I call shlav bet, meaning a second shtar, which this is the clincher. So the first shtar was a shtar psicha, because he refused to show up in Beis Din. We're still not going to write the second shtar, which is called the shtar adrachta. We're going to give him a 90-day period, right? A 90-day stay till we write kasvina and adrachta and nichse. Now, once the adrachta is written, let's understand this adrachta has the following nusach in it. It states that we, the undersigned, have hereby granted the malve so-and-so the rights to collect from the lova so-and-so wherever he finds nechassim. Okay, now we're going to clarify, circumscribe that in just a minute. So I'm going to tell you now what's the final maskana of the sugya, and even this is questionable, that the malva has a shtar adrachta on the karka of the lova, not on metaltalit. Okay, we're gonna try to see why that is so interesting. Vahani mili. Now, why do we give the lova an extension? The Amar, because the lova sends a message to Beis Din. Asina, I will show up in Beis Din. Give me a little bit of an extension of time to pay back the malva. Aval Amar, if the lova is saying lo asina, I'm not interested in coming into Beis Din. Let's say, for example, he's in the next country over. You know, he's not in Switzerland, he's in Italy. So he sends a message from Italy to Switzerland to the Beis Din. He says, I like it here in Italy. I'm not interested in showing up. In that case, Lialter Kasvin. Immediately we write the Shtar Adrachta, we give it over to the Malva, and the Malva could confiscate the property. Again, how the Malva does that and who's going to supervise his confiscation of property, because we have to do an evaluation of the property to make sure that the Malva is not taking too much property from the Lova, that's going to be a sugya later on. Vahani mili, and when do we say that we're going to wait until he comes when he claims that he is going to come to Beis Din? Bimilva, in the case of a chov, where he has to pay back a debt, Aval bepikadon, if he has to return an object, we're talking about a be'en, a physical object, not a chov, an abstract payment, is li'alter kasvina. In other words, the mafkid who gave him his cow, or whatever he was mafkid in, has a right to say, give me back my cow. There's no reason to extend that for a period of time. Even though, one might argue, let's say the cow died as a result of pshia, and therefore the shomer, the nifkad, is chayv to pay, and at that point it becomes a chov. No, we're not going to say that. And the Magid Mishnah in Hilchos Malva Lova says that in the case of halva, the malva tacitly agrees. Again, I don't think we actually knock on the door of the malva and we say, do you agree to the following terms? That if the lova can't pay you back when the time comes, we'll give him another 90 days to gather together the funds. We don't actually have to knock on Mr. Malva's door. But that's the halacha. The halacha is that every malva who extends a loan to a lova realizes that the lova might possibly have taken the money, invested it, and he failed, and the money is not there, and he's going to do his best to try to pay back the malva, but it's going to take some time. So the malva, from the get-go, agrees to these terms to write the shtar adrachta after 90 days and postpone the shtar adrachta until the lova has time, ample time, to try to gather together the funds. But in the case of a pikadon, where Reuven gives an object over to Shimon and he expects Shimon to return that object, it doesn't cross the mind of the mafkid of Reuven that he should give an extended amount of time for the nifkad, for the shomer, to return the object. He wants his object back. And if the object is not there, let him pay for it. that's already a kind of quasi-gzela on the part of the nifkat. I mean, you might argue that even in the case of halva of a chov, if the lover doesn't pay back the chov, he's a gazlan, but it's a different kind of gzela. It's a gzela on a chov. It's not on a concrete object. It's not on a be'en. So the malva says to the lova, okay, I'll give you a certain amount of time to try to liquidate assets and bring the money to me. But in the case of a pikadon, we're not going to give any extension to the nifkat. If he was poshea, then basically he is responsible for the loss of the object and he has to pay for it. I would like to add the following. And again, I might be treading on dangerous ground here, I don't know. But it seems to me that the same qualification, I will be cut low, and Lialta Kasvina would apply to the case of a mazik. If Reuven damages Shimon's property, then Shimon never agrees to give the mazik an extension of time. This is a special din in halva. When the Gemara says pikadon, I think pikadon here means anything but a halva. Anything in which an object was destroyed or wasn't returned, the owner of that object, the baal, whether he be the mafkid or whether he be the nizak, in all those cases, he has rights to say, "I want a collection immediately." It never crossed my mind that he would have to gather together funds to pay me back, and I would give him an extension.
If the lover deposits a pikadon with the malver as security for his loan, at what stage can the malver take that?
The mashkon? Yeah. When can he collect the mashkon? Honestly, I don't know, Michael. I could just give you a like shoot from the hip kind of answer. I would say the following, that the moment that the date of Piron comes by, the malva automatically becomes the owner of the mashkon. Now if the lover wants to pay back and redeem his mashkon, that's his problem. And if it takes him 90 days, it's going to take him 90 days. If it takes him a year, it takes him a year. V'chikas vinon. Now, keep in mind, the malva has a tremendous power in his hands once he has the shtar drachta. Because with that shtar drachta, which is signed by Bezdin, he can begin to confiscate properties of the lova. Says the Gemara, there's a limitation. Chikas vinan amakar koi, avala metaltali lo. The shtar drachta only gives the malva rights to collect karka, but not to collect metaltal. Why is that so? Oh. So the Gemara here comes up with a whole scenario, a whole, you know, step-by-step process in which the power of the malve, if he has a shtar drachta metaltan, is too great. It's too powerful. Why? Dilma, if the malve is uncouth, he's unethical, shamit v'ochaluhu malve l'metaltalehim. Immediately with this shtar adrachta, he's going to collect metaltalim and he's going to immediately be machala them. Achil. Achil doesn't mean to eat them, it means to consume them, meaning to use them up. And then kiosa love umaisi sadi umarale lishtar. Now watch what's going on here. The Gemara says that although the malve is in the right, notice we passed on a verdict in favor of the malva, and that's because the malva was able to be mekayim the shtar, there is a logical possibility that at some point the lova will live up to his claim that he has edim to disqualify the shtar and to prove that the shtar is a forgery. So the halach has to take into consideration that sometime down the line, perhaps the lova will show up with edim umarale l'shtar to cancel and disqualify the shtar. Now, what happens in this case? The malva had a shtar adrachta on metaltali, right in the havamina, and if we collected these metaltali, the metaltali are gone, right? As opposed to karak, which always remains in its place, the metaltali are gone. He's already liquidated the metaltali. Now, the lova comes back, and he disqualifies the shtar. Now he wants to get his metaltali back. Velo mishkach midi l'migba. And he can't find anything to collect from. In other words, there's a balancing here between the malva and the lova. We want to be very just and fair to the malva and give him a power to collect his chov, because after all, we gave the lova an extension of 90 days, the malva is itching to get paid. But on the other hand, we have to open up a possibility and protect the rights of the lover, that maybe the lover will invalidate the shtar. So if the malva with the shtar drachta is limited to collect what? Karga. Then in event that the lover will be able to disqualify the shtar, he'll be able to collect his karka back, and everything goes back to what it was before. But if on the other hand, we're going to allow the malva through this adrachta to collect even metaltali, well, what happens when the lova, if and when the lova disqualifies the shtar, and he comes back and he says, I want to get my possessions back, there's nowhere to be found. There's no security that could calm down the position of the lova. The Islay Makarkele Lamalve Kasvinan. However, says the Gemara, there is one scenario in which we can grant the Malve a Shtar Adrachta that's all inclusive, and it will extend even as far as Metaltalin is concerned. We don't have to be worried about the Love losing his money in event that he's able to passel the Shtar. And that's the case with the Malve as Makarke. If the Malva has karkos, then even in the worst case scenario that the Malva through the Shtar Adrachta collected metaltali and consumed the metaltali, the Lova still has recourse to get back his money by collecting the karka of the Malva. Again, this is a little bit tricky, because how do we know that the Malva is going, right, how do we know that he's going to hold on to his karka? And I've wanted two answers. Either what we're talking about is the assumption that people don't sell karka, or perhaps they don't sell karka within a short period of time, and immediately after the collection of the shtar drachta, the lova is going to produce his edim, and he's going to be able to collect from the karka of the malva. However, lovi, the Gemara rejects it, and the Gemara says adrachta metalta lo kasvina. It's an absolute rule with no exceptions. We do not write a shtar adrachta metalta. Afal gav de islay mekarka. Even though the malva is the proud owner of karkos, chayshinon shema tachsif. Now I'm going to translate this literally, and then we'll try to understand what does this chayshinon shema tachsif mean. The word tachsif can be translated in many different ways, but the common denominator to all those translations is yiskalkel. Now again, if we talk about a field, then the possibility of kilkul hasod, the kilkul hakarka, must mean that there'll be a drought, or that there'll be some sort of an attack of I don't know what, or a flood, or something that'll destroy the karka. If the word karka here means real estate, which also is mechubal karka kikarka, then I understand that it could very well be that chas v'shalom there'll be a tornado or something that'll destroy the building, and therefore shema tachsif, it will be miskalkel. We want to protect the interest of the lover because of the possibility that down the line he can invalidate the shtar, and therefore we have to give the lover certain security, and that security will have to be in the fact that the malva is not collecting metaltali, but rather the malva is collecting karkos. If he's collecting karkos, then the lover knows that those karkos are there to be had in event that he can turn over the case in the other direction. Now, v'chikas v'inan adrachta, the Gemara says, modiim le. There's no such thing, says the Gemara, as writing a shtar adrachta and handing it over to the malva without notifying the lova. Why? Because the lova always wants to have a possibility to run into Bezdin and to counter the evidence of the malva by bringing evidence and edim that testify that the shtar is not a valid shtar. So we have to notify the lova. There's no such thing as a shtar adrachta without notifying the lova. Vahani mili. But again, you know, the Gemara is balancing back and forth. Well, you know, what's going to be, says the Gemara, in a case where the lova is nowhere to be found? Let's say the lova is out in China, right? And we can't notify the lova, and therefore the malva can't collect his shtar. I mean, he has a shtar. The shtar is mekuyom. So the Gemara says, "Hani mida de makarif." So the Rishonim here say, "What does it mean, makarif? He's within a distance of one day's journey." The Rambam says, 2 days' journey. So again, he's within a close radius. So we hope that he'll come by, or we'll send a message to him, and we'll soon see who's going to be the messenger. Avol mirchak, but if the lova is outside of that radius, he's far away, is then lo. Then we have the malva's rights to bang on the table and say, look, you know what? You can't get the word to the lova. I have a shtar. I want to be able to collect my property. But ve'i mirchak ve'ika krovim inami ika shairasa the azli ve'asa hasam. This sounds like Cheskes Habatim, for those of you who ever learned Cheskes Habatim. It means that if, even though, despite the fact that the lova is at a distance, there are relatives that can somehow get the word to him, you know, sell him a text message, send him a telegram, or possibly there are shayaros, how do you say shayaros in English?
Caravans
or transports, you know, they're going back and forth, right? And therefore, the mashinale, we can wait and delay the writing of the shtar drachta for a certain period of time until the shayaros will certainly get the message over to the loaf and it'll notify him. Now, what's the maximum amount of time that we would wait? In a case where the shayaros mitsuyos, what, he's very far away? That's tresar yarchi shata. Why tresar yarchi? Why 12 months? 6 months going and 6 months coming back. Ad the azla viasi shayaros, till the shayaros go back, go out there and then come back again. That's 6 months in each direction. Again, all this is in a case where the lova is known to be located in a certain place, and we have reason to believe that the word could get to him within this defined reasonable amount of time, which is 6 months here and 6 months getting back, so that the lova can show up. And the Gemara thinks they have a raya from a certain case of Ravina, and the way he paskin in that case, that 12 months is valid.
So you've got 15 months altogether before you can actually get your money.
Let's just figure this out. You've got 3 months after he's notified, and 1 year. But the Gemara is going to reject this 1 year, because the Gemara thinks that, how do I know about this 1 year? Ki hod Ravina, from the case of Ravina, shahaya lemar acha. Now please note, it's mara acha, and not rav acha. So chas v'shalom, we're not talking about the Tana of Acha. He was a very holy man. But we're talking about a person who had the name Acha. He's called Mr. Acha. Okay? And Tresar Yarche Shata. So Ravina Shaha means he delayed the collection of the property of Mar Acha for a full 12-month period. In other words, he gave an extension to Mar Acha of 12 months in order to pay back the Chov. In order, first of all, to find out about the Chov. Adi azla v'aisei shayorta mi bechozoi. This Mar Acha was in a place called Bechozoi, which was a mahalach by shayoros of 6 months. And from this case, you see the Ravina Paskin, we give 6 months this way and 6 months coming back, a 12-month period. Velohi, the Gemara says, no. This case of Ravina was a special case, and you have no right to equate it to and universalize it. Hasam, in the case of Ravina with Mar Acha. Who is this Mar Acha? Inish Alima Hava. He was a very tough guy. He had certain powers. Maybe not just how strong he was, but maybe he was the president. Whatever it is. So, Ihavya Matya Adrachta Liyode Lohavi Efshala Fuki Mine. Okay.
Is he the lender?
Yeah, no, I made a mistake. Yeah. Did I say that he was the borrower? No. He's the lender. Yeah. Okay, he's the lender. So what are we doing? Ravina is trying to convince the Malve that we got to give the loaf an extended amount of time. In a sense, Ravina is dilly-dallying and postponing the Adrachta to give the loaf a little bit more time. And why is that? Because the Malve himself, in this case, is an Odom Olim. What does that mean, he's an Odom Olim?
He's not a nice guy.
And it means that if he gets the Shtar Drachta, That's not going to be good. Why? Because based on that shtar drachta, he's going to somehow be able to pull out, confiscate possessions of the loaf. And not only that, he's such a no goodnik that he's going to hold on to the shtar drachta. We won't be able to get it out of his hands. Again, how he's going to fool Bezdin, he might go to a different Bezdin, but since he's holding on to the shtar drachta, he's going to be able to collect from the shtar drachta multiple times. And since we're dealing with such a Bulvan, you know, such a tough guy, therefore Ravina wanted to give the Lover a little bit of extra time here before he would desperately write the shtar drachta. Aval hacha, but in the case of a regular person, even if there's shayaris mitzuyos going this way and going that, lo natrinan lei, we're not gonna force the malva to wait in a full year before he can receive the shtar drachta. Ella, but rather adi azel shlicha, will send the shliach bezdin. Bitlasa b'shabsa. Okay, we'll have to understand what happens over here. On Monday, Bezdin was mekayim the shtar of the malva and came to the conclusion that the lover therefore has to pay up this chov. Now on Tuesday, the very next morning, Bezdin will appoint a shliach Bezdin. We'll soon see exactly what the status or the credibility of this shliach Bezdin is. And they will send him on the way. And what's going to happen is the Asa Barba B'Shat B'Shabsa. He's going to show up at the Lova's door on Wednesday. So again, on Monday the Psak Bezdin, on Tuesday the appointment of a Shliach Bezdin, on Wednesday the Shliach Bezdin arrives at the home of the Lova, and then we give the Lova one day to return and pay up the Chov. Ula Chamsha B'Shabta Koi B'dinei. And by Thursday of that same week, we expect that the lover would have responded, I guess, if the word is appropriate, to the subpoena of Bezdin. He would have showed up in Bezdin on that very Thursday, 3 days later, in order to be omed bifnei Bezdin. If he doesn't show up by Thursday, we write a shtar drachta. Again, we don't write the shtar drachta until we give him the 90-day period, as we discussed before, but we're ready to write a shtar drachta. So again, it comes out that this entire halacha that we postulated before, the imirchak, that if he's far away, that we're going to give him an extension, that doesn't apply. The only time period that we'll give as an extension if the lova is far away is if he's one day distanced from the Bezdin. Then we'll give him up to 3 days. If he's more, then that's his problem. The Malv has a right to say, I'm not waiting. I'm not waiting till he comes from Medina Sayyam. I want to get paid now. And then we write a shtar drach. Omar Avina, hai shlucha derabbanan. Who is the shliach that the Rabbanan send? Because he's going to testify that he came to the Lova and notified him, and then we waited and the Lova didn't show up, and therefore we can confiscate the Lova's property. Is Mehemina Lake Betre. We can believe him as if he were two Aden. Because since Bezdin checks out his credibility, his integrity, and they came to the conclusion that he's an honest person, they rely on him, and in this case they give him the status of two witnesses. We don't assume the possibility that he's lying. Says the Gemara, wait a minute, what are you talking about? Are you talking about forcing the Lover to pay up? If you're forcing the lover to pay up, then the Torah itself says, "Al pishnayim edim yakum dov." With all the respect, this shliach Bezdin has credibility. He has integrity, a great reputation. But the Torah requires two witnesses, and nothing less will do. Says the Gemara, "You misinterpreted Ravina. When did Ravina upgrade the status of the shliach Bezdin to that of two edim? In what context? In what dimension? Hani mili l'shamta." That's only as far as putting him into Nidui. Because as far as putting him into Nidui, then the Chachamim could say, once we trust this Shliach Bezdin, and we give him the status like two Edim, and we know now that the Lova is not showing up, even though we gave the Lova, he was one day away, we gave him the amount of time it would take him to get to Bezdin by Thursday, he didn't show up, so we could put him into Nidui. Aval bit lepischa came unto Mamona komachasule de kaboile le mesiv le zuze le safra lo Now what's going on over here? I would have written the Gemara thusly. I would have said, Hani Mili, Lishamta, Aval Li, Adrachta. For that we need to aid them. Because Adrachta means that now the Malva has rights to go down and collect and confiscate the karka of the Lova, the possessions of the Lova. The Gemara is a bigger chiddush. The Gemara wants to say that that after Bezdin puts this Lova into Nidui, based on the Shliach Bezdin's testimony, now they write a Shtar Psicha. Now why is a Shtar Psicha Mamona Kamachasale? What loss of Mamona? Again, he can't daven in the Tzibur, and he can't, he can't be an upstanding member of the community, but that's not Mamona Kamachasale. So the Gemara comes up with the following idea, that there's something called Dmei Sofer, which means that whenever Bezdin writes a shtar, they have to hire a scribe to write the shtar. Who's going to pay for the writing of the shtar? Who's going to pay the sofer? And the halacha is that if one of the two parties is the one who caused the writing of the shtar, that party is the one who's going to have to pay the tashlumei sofer. He's the sofer of Bezdin, and he has to be paid. Once Bezdin is going to instruct the sofer to write a shtar nidui, which is called a psicha, then they are automatically being mechayev the lova in this case, because he was the one who's being put into nidui, to pay the schar sofer. And in that case, we need two witnesses to testify that the lova got the message and refused to show up in Bezdin.
So you can't send the one messenger.
And then one shliach is not enough. You need another shliach that could serve as a second aid. And once we have two aidim, then and only then can we force the lover to pay up the schar sofer. Because that's already dine mamonos. What time is it?
Quarter past.
Quarter past. Okay, so we'll stop here. I needed actually two more lines to get to the next sugi, but it doesn't matter. We'll do that only the next week. When is it? Tuesday? Yeah? Okay, good.